Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world that is constantly changing, it can seem harder and harder to keep up. Yet, we all know those people who, no matter what challenges or changes come their way, they somehow manage to thrive. They're contributing their very best, they are engaged in what matters most to them, and they are achieving the success that they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and what surprises show up. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be moving up within an organization, you might be an entrepreneur, a business owner, a salesperson, or self-employed. Or you may just be that person who feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when challenge or doubt show up, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. My guest today is someone that I have known for a number of years. I first met her when she was a customer service rep at a company that is one of my clients. She was so good at her job that we would play her calls in training as an example of what best-in-class service sounds like. She then decided to make the transition to a regional sales rep at that company, and she is every bit as successful. She is part of the quarterly coaching calls that I do there, and I can tell you that there is no one that I've coached that has consistently demonstrated more tenacity or a greater hunger to learn. She is also a breast cancer survivor and someone who simply knows how to triumph over challenge. Her name is Carol Klaus, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Carol, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Bob. It's great to be here.
Well, Carol, I know a little bit about your journey, and I know that you've had a lot of twists, a lot of turns, some surprises, and yet what I know about you is you never seem daunted by those. So would you kind of fill us in a little bit on your journey so far?
Absolutely. And I think that the most important part of my life to start from was during my teenage years. I came from a very affluent Catholic family in an economy that was basically hitting a recession similar to, you know, what's going on now. And my stay-at-home mom, that she had stayed home all her life and took care of her family and stuff like that, she actually ended up having to go to work. And when she went to work, she worked about 12 to 13 hours a day.
Wow.
Along with my dad. Because of the circumstances of the recession, my dad lost his business, and I went from going from a private school to a public school where I really didn't know anybody at that time. It created basically a perfect storm, if you will, for a crisis, from trying to fit in to the disappearance of my normal family life. You know, I gravitated at that point towards the first person who paid me any attention, and ended up being 17, 18 years old in a very unhappy teenage marriage, which resulted in two wonderful, wonderful boys. That's what came out of that. And so it was very, very difficult years through my high school years. And I ended up being able, I had enough credits by the time I got pregnant to graduate with my class in high school. And like I said, my family was very reluctant to accept the fact that I was a teenage mom.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of hard years and healing that had to come from that. My parents knew that I was having relationships and a relationship and was unwilling to accept that or help me through it or give me any advice, which in turn led to, the situation that happened with my pregnancy. I'm not blaming them. It's just a result of not having the mentorship that I needed at that time.
Yeah. And think about it. Your whole world was kind of, you know, that had to be so hard, Carol, when your mom went from always being at home and, you know, and then everything got turned upside down for you.
Right. Right. It was just the perfect storm. And again, I would never, ever blame anybody for my decisions because ultimately they were my decisions. But sometimes we get put in a position that, again, I was just looking for a place to fit in. Yeah. I was looking for a place to fit in. And at that time, that was, I met a guy that was 2-3 years older than me, and he had established friendships, and I was going to public school and didn't know anybody. And so it was a very attractive to find a place to fit in.
Mm-hmm. We all want to belong. And
yes, exactly. And I think that's why that so many people gravitate towards, whether good or bad or negative or positive, they'll gravitate towards the first thing that mm-hmm. comes along that will give them that feeling of belonging. That's why I think that communities that offer, you know, like basketball or like events after school or anything to help kids fit in is so important.
Yep. There was I didn't see it, but someone was telling me about it. I think it was a special on Netflix, and it was Kevin Hart, the comedian. And in the special, he said something like, acceptance is one of the most powerful drugs in the world, because we all, like, it's what we, as a human, it's what we crave. So you're spot on, Carol, like the programs that give kids and just people, you know, community, a place to belong. I think it's huge. So you had two sons, is that right?
I did. Fast forward a little bit, 7 years. I was in a unhealthy relationship for the first year or two. It was not too bad of a marriage. And then, the pressures started getting to my ex-husband that I'm not married to anymore. But the pressure started getting to him, and he became both emotionally and physically abusive.
Wow.
And once I saw the evidence of the physical abuse that was happening to my boys as well, I immediately left the relationship.
Yeah.
Because I thought I could deal with it. I'm like, I didn't come from a background that people got divorces. You know, people stuck it out. They learned to deal with it, and they made things work. And I thought I could do the same thing. I'm like, we thought that, my family actually stepped in, and they sent them to school, and we started trying to make things work, but again, it was just that we're just a bad relationship all around.
Well, and I think based on what you're saying there too, Carol, like when you see the evidence, how it's affecting the kids, I mean, that's hard. I mean, so that had to take a lot of courage on your part. I mean, especially considering, what you said about, it wasn't done in your family, and that had to take a lot of courage. to walk away.
It is. And people, you know, that watch these shows on TV and they'll say, gosh, I don't know. I just don't understand why she doesn't leave him. Why doesn't she leave him? Well, you know, when you don't have a supportive family that says, hey, you can come live with us until you, you know, get your life together. You don't have that. You don't have any real background of friendships. This is the only person that you've known, you know, so It had to get to the point that I felt like my children's health was at risk for me to make that decision to have the courage to leave. And once I left, I never looked back.
Good for you.
You know, that wasn't the life that he wanted as well. So he didn't give me any problems with, you know, seeing the kids, basically never had any interest in seeing the kids. Wow. So I was very lucky that way. Didn't have to worry about that and those struggles, you know. So fast forward about 7 years, we were married about 7 years. And I remember the kids were at that time, they were like 7 and 5 at this point. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting on the edge of my bed and saying, okay, well, what do I do now?
What's next?
And, what's next? And I didn't feel, I felt so robbed of everything emotionally because of the fact that he had been a cheater. He had lied about it. I had so much mistrust for people, so much mistrust for the truth, because I knew what was going on, but it would never come to revelation. It never happened that I found out the truth, but I knew it was happening. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of mistrust, and I wasn't at a strong period in my life. So I was sitting there on the edge of my bed and saying, okay, well, the kids started school, and I really need something to help me feel better about myself. So I actually joined a cosmetology school, and I got my cosmetology license at that point.
Good for you.
Yeah. And it was a good start. I actually started feeling better about myself on the outside. I started feeling better about myself on the inside, because I had always loved school. I got, you know, good grades, and I love studying. I love researching different things. So it was, you know, it was actually really, really easy for me to finish that and graduate in that. And even though, you know, I didn't do that for very long, it was a good step in my life to move forward again.
Yeah.
Right after I finished that, and I met my to-be husband now. And we have been married for almost 30 years. And
that's awesome.
Yes. And we actually moved from up North Michigan to Virginia. And I finished going to school. I enrolled in a school, and I started going towards my bachelor's degree. As I was going towards my bachelor's degree, I learned I had gotten cancer. It was 2010. 2008 was when we moved to Virginia, and I was working as an administrator for some real estate agents. And the biggest thing, Bobby, I can remember in our experiences in Virginia was, we were having we moved to a brand new area. We didn't know anybody. We didn't have any friends there. There was no family there. It was just for work. And I remember feeling a bit of despair. Have you ever just felt that in your life, a little bit of despair? Like,
yeah.
And so I felt this little bit of despair, and I walked down to the park there along the Potomac River outside of Washington, D.C., in a town called Alexandria. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking in the park, and I remember seeing a man, and he was sitting on a bench, and he was a homeless man. And I didn't have any fear of him, anything like that. I went down and I plopped right down next to him.
Of course you would.
And he's like, and he looked at me, and here's the oddest thing. He says, "Why do you want to sit by me?"
Oh,
I know. And he says, I haven't taken a bath and you're all dressed up. And why do you want to sit by me?" And I said, "Well, I just wanted to talk to you for a while. I thought that you looked like you needed somebody to talk to." And he looked at me with the biggest eyes, and he just said, "Well, it's weird that you say that, because I was just thinking of committing suicide."
No way.
And I said, "I am so, so sorry to hear that." I said, what's going on in your life that's causing you to want to do that?" And he told me his story, and I told him my story, and I swear he started tearing up. And he said, "Well, you've had a long journey, haven't you?" And I said, "It seems like you've had a very hard journey yourself." I said, "Is there, anything that I can say that would, make things better for you, or anything I can do?" And I remember having this small Bible in my pocket, and I pulled it out, and it had a blue ribbon in it. And I said, "Every time that you think about wanting to take your life," I said, "I want you to open this up, and I want you to touch this blue ribbon, and just remember that this blue ribbon stands for hope." And he looked at me, he says, "I can't take that." He says, "I live at the shelter, and it'll get stolen." I says, "If it gets stolen, then it's going to be stolen by somebody that needs it more than you." Wow. I said, "Take it." And I swear, I said, "I have to go back to work." I said, "Is there anything I can do for you? Is there anything?" And I looked at him and I said, "I love you." And he goes, "I love you too." He's like, "Don't leave." And I said, I have to go back to work. And I swear to this day, I still feel like it was, like an angel or something. I know that sounds mm-hmm. weird.
No.
It just was an awesome encounter. And yeah. He needed me and I needed him at that time. And we got through that obstacle together.
And, Carol, that's a beautiful story. And, I've known you for a few years, professionally, because of our paths have crossed. And it doesn't surprise me at all, because you just show up with your heart all the time. And you said that you were kind of feeling a moment of despair. And then after that interaction, what happened to the despair?
It really seemed to ebb away. It really did. I just felt, I just felt connected somehow. Mm-hmm. I felt like I had made a connection to this person, and that through that connection, we had healed each other.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
And I felt healed in a way. And I really actually look back at that experience, and I still get strength from it. We moved shortly after that, and we came, it was 2000 and it was actually 2008. We came to South Carolina, and I got cancer in 2010.
Wow.
And I wanted to go back to school and finish my bachelor's degree and then get my master's. And I just put in the paperwork to go back to school, and I found out that I had breast cancer.
Oh my goodness.
And so, I got a real heavy feeling from it, but I just somehow knew that it was going to be okay. I remember going in for the surgery, and there was another lady, and she was laying in the bed next to me. Somehow it was kind of like they had kind of sheet drawn, but it wasn't drawn all the way, and I could see her and she could see me. And I said, and this was right before the surgery. And I said, how are you doing? How are you feeling? And she's like, oh, I'm just really scared. And I don't know that I'm going to make it through the surgery. And I said, you're absolutely going to make it. You'll be fine. I really have faith that you're going to be okay. And they wheeled me into the surgery and made it through surgery fine, and came out. And then I remember the nurse coming up to me, and she goes, you know, she says, what's really weird, she says, is that a lot of people come out of surgery and they're very despondent. Their arms are flailing. They're shouting out. She says, I didn't even know you were awake. She says, wow. It was just like a little angel dropped out of heaven in your body. And I kind of smiled at that. And I said, how, you know, I asked about the lady that was next to me and if she was out of surgery yet. And she said, yeah, she made it through. She's okay. She's doing okay. And I just felt a really big peace. Like, yeah. Again, I connected with somebody in my life.
Yeah.
In a difficult time.
And that's amazing. You come out of surgery and one of your first questions is how is she doing? But you know, Carol, it doesn't surprise me because, I mean, from what I know about you, you're one of the most like relational people, person type of, you know, that I've ever met. Like you just have this, it seems like you just have this genuine love of people.
That's funny that you should say that because I remember when I first took, you know, an Aslan training course, and one of the things that we had to do was we had a line up. You go task oriented people all the way to the left, relational people all the way to the right. And I remember I just started, so I didn't want my boss who was standing in the back thinking that I was just all about relational. Like I could get a job done. I know I could get a job done. So I stood in the middle, Bobby.
Oh, no, Carol.
I put myself right in the middle, you know, because I'm like, okay, I can get away with being in the middle here. This is a good area for me because my boss will think, okay, I got a little bit of task oriented and a little bit of relational. And so I put myself right in the middle. And my boss shouted out from the back. He's like, hey, newbie. He says, take about 5 steps towards the right-hand side there.
Yeah. Carol, you're not going to hide this about yourself. There's no way.
And so to this day, I remember that. And that was 13 years ago now.
But, oh, my goodness.
I laugh because I, you know, they had me pegged.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And now if I remember correctly, you said that you'd only been at that company for a couple of years, but yet Carol, I think you told me like you didn't miss any work.
No, I didn't. I actually, and it was hard. It was hard because I really, really, you know, had learned a lot about this company and I really, really wanted to move forward and go all the way. And I was feeling like if I told them how serious that the cancer was, that it wasn't just a little tiny lump that they were taking off. It was a breast that yeah. They would be like, oh, she can't do it. And we better, you know, I just had all these weird things go through my mind, Bobby, like, you know, I wanted to downplay, and I think a lot of people do downplay their illnesses. Have you mm-hmm. found that to be true?
I think we do, and we don't want to be perceived as weak, you know. And
right.
And if it's illness or challenge or whatever it might be that we're going through, like we don't. Sometimes it's hard to be vulnerable. You know what I mean?
Right. Like I know a lot of big political people that have hid their, not only political, but like actors and stuff, you know, both in like, I guess, you know, I was watching these clips about Hillary Clinton and she was like, she kept falling. She kept tripping and falling. And then Val Kilmore with his cancer and not wanting to come out because of losing acting roles. Yeah. So, you know, it's finding people in my life like that, that I could relate to. Again, looking for somehow to relate to somebody, because I did downplay it a lot. I downplayed it. I went through 30 treatments. I lost my breast. I went through 30 treatments of radiation. I was severely burned on my chest from the radiation. And
I can't imagine.
Yeah, just kept still going to work, you know, and just struggling through the day, you know, just, you know, it's odd because during that time, Bobby, it's like I felt like I could even help people even more. It's like during that time, I got some of the best reviews, customer reviews I ever got.
Wow.
I remember one day, this man called me, and it's like I was right in the middle of, you know, my radiation treatments, right in the middle of, you know, recuperating, and I was at work and I was on the phone and he was yelling at me.
Just what you need.
He was literally yelling at me, and I just said, okay, how can I help you? And is there anything that I can do to make your day better? And just trying to get to the root, get past the anger and get to what was going on that I could help him with.
Mm-hmm.
And this went on for like 5 minutes, Bobby. Like he was loud towards me, and then I stayed calm. And then he finally said, and this was key, he finally said, Carol, he says, I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at my son and I'm mad at the world, but I'm not mad at you.
Oh.
And I went, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So every call after that I got, I had to think, this is not about me. This is not necessarily about a problem that they may have. These are desperate people in desperate situations that they may be I may be the only person that they talk to the whole day.
You may be the only person that listened to them the whole day, Carol.
Yeah.
You know, really hurt them.
Yeah. Isn't that just so real?
Yep. We're hungry for that.
That really changed everything about my job. It really did. Somehow that just clicked in my mind that changed a lot about my job and about different things that were going on.
Yeah.
So I did. I got through the breast cancer situation. And I thought about, again, going back to school. And it was my husband's turn to have an extremely difficult couple of years. He lost his mom, his dad, and then his sister committed suicide.
Oh.
And then he lost his brother to cancer all within the next 4 to 5 years. Along
That's horrific.
With the doctors telling me that I should go ahead and have a hysterectomy. Because of they didn't want the cancer to go to my uterus.
Yeah. Wow.
And so it was many, many, you know, many hard years. But during that time, you know, there's different things that help keep that together, you know, friendships that were built. Mm-hmm. And things like that to help me through that time.
Yeah. I mean, and thankfully you shared with me 10 years now cancer-free, right?
Yes, that's correct. 10 years cancer-free. Yeah, that was 2010. that I had cancer.
Yeah.
And it was, and it does get easier for people that, you know, are going through cancer and they're struggling with it. And for some reason, Bobby, the first thing that people want to tell you is, oh, my aunt died of cancer last year.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but you know, oh, you know, you'll say, oh yeah, I've been a survivor for 2 years. Oh, my sister, she survived 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, and so you always have to keep encouraging yourself and get around positive people.
Mm-hmm.
And get into a support group as well to hear the good positive stories of the people that have survived.
Yep. Because people do that. I was talking to someone else and she said, like, it's the last thing that someone wants to hear in that case, you know, but people fall into it. And Carol, you're kind of alluding to it here with the getting around positive people and the positive voices and everything, but you guys went through like some serious, hard challenges. What kept you going?
You know, it's all these experiences that I went through throughout my life and all the obstacles. And I know we kind of touched on that a little bit, and that was one of the key things too that I learned from you guys, you know, that those obstacles about leading people out of the darkness, that those obstacles are always going to be there. It's just finding your way around them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knowing that they're there, that they're always going to be there. You're always going to have obstacles in your life, but knowing that the obstacles are there, finding your way around them, and knowing that you're going to get to the other side. People, they live in the moment, Bobby. They live there. They get so consumed by the moment. When our house flooded, we left for a couple days, and I got a call from my neighbor saying that was keeping an eye on the house, saying, "Carol, your refrigerator flooded behind your refrigerator, and all your flooring's going to need to be tore up." And this is my husband's dad and mom had just passed away. I'm like only a year or two away from having cancer, just going into having my hysterectomy. And I remember just sitting down in the middle of the living room and just crying.
Like, not the floor too.
I'm looking around the room going, how in the world am I going to get all this stuff moved out of here, cleaned out of here? Because it wasn't just the kitchen. It was the living room. It was the dining room. It was all the furniture. It was just everything had to be moved, stripped down, bleached. Then new flooring laid, then the furniture had to come all back in and all the stuff. And we're going through all this. And you know what? I just started crying in the middle of the living room floor. And I'm like, okay, well, this is not going to do anything right here. This is not helping at all. And I just looked at the corner. And I'm like, okay, I can do that corner. Mm-hmm. I can go ahead and today I'm going to do that corner. I'm going to move the table and I'm going to move all the knick-knacky things and get that corner cleaned out. And today I'm doing the corner. And I think that's if somehow, if you could just get past that day and instead of trying to look at the whole picture, mm-hmm. and just get past that moment, you know, that's the key.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's one small thing at a time versus, I think you said it this way, it's one small thing at a time versus like the whole mountain all at once.
Right, right. And I'll tell you, everybody has a different way of having peace in their life. And that peace came to me in the form of accepting Christ into my life and really having a peace and joy about the that relationship and going to church and meeting new people and being involved in and events, because we had our marriage marriage is not an easy journey.
No.
And it wasn't, everything has not been roses. I mean, you put together a guy that's a big German and you put him with somebody that's got a French background and you're looking for an argument. So, so it's not been an easy journey, and every day is about compromising. It's about talking through things and learning from them and just, I just can't be another person that my husband's lost in his life. So no matter how things get or how many disagreements that we have, I always find ways to work things out.
Yeah. And I think to your point there, Carol, I mean, that it takes commitment, right? It takes work.
Right. Exactly. It does. It takes a lot of work. And, but again, there is hope on the other side of that. There really is. There's a lot of a lot of good things that will come. And you can look back at that and say, hey, I survived that. I did it. I did it. I made it through that.
Yep. And that kind of gives us courage for the future.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And that's where, I think that it's really, really important for these kind of, discussions so that other people can say, gosh, look at her life. She was physically abused. She was mentally abused. She's had cancer. She's dealt with suicide in her life. I was very close to my sister-in-law. My sister-in-law name was Carol as well. And I was very close to her. And she's dealt with all these issues and she's happy. She's got joy. She's got friendships. She's leading a normal life. Yeah, it's not perfect by any means at all, but it's, coming out the other side and just get through that moment. That moment's not going to last forever. That obstacle that's in your way, it may always be there. It could be a handicap. It could be that you lost your leg in a war. That obstacle may always be there. Cancer's always going to be, in one way, a part of my life. Every time I feel like a muscle ache, yeah. Every time I feel like my back hurts, oh my gosh, did the cancer get to my bones? Did it get to my muscles? Did it get to my liver? It's always going to be a part of my life. I'm always going to think it's there, but it's knowing that to get through that moment, to get past that day.
Yeah. Cause to your point, Carol, the moment doesn't last forever. It can seem like when something like that happens, it can seem like it is going to last forever, but it doesn't. When we talked before, you said the plan I had in mind for myself, it just wasn't in the cards, but you had absolutely no remorse about that. You said, yeah, some things kept you from doing your plan, but you always just believe something good's going to happen on the other side.
Yes, you're right. I had a different plan for my life. That journey never happened the way that I thought it was going to, but I have no regrets. I do not have any regrets. I don't have any regrets about the decisions that I had where I had my children. I don't have any regrets about not finishing school at this point. That may be something that I'm looking at doing now. I might want to do that. And the plan did change.
Of course.
And
right?
It wasn't the journey that I had anticipated or that I had even thought about. But we create our new futures. mm-hmm. you know, by the steps that we're doing. Just take one small step. Don't think about, okay, well, 4 years from now, I'm going to have a degree. Think about going down to the counseling center, you know, and you know, checking in.
That's right.
Don't think about 4 years down the road, I may have something, you know. Just take that one moment at a time.
What's one thing you can do today?
Right.
You know,
what's one thing you can do today to make your journey a little bit better?
Mm-hmm. And you know, Carol, what you were saying there just triggered for me. This was, oh my gosh, I think it was back in 2002. I was at some kind of an entrepreneurial conference. So it was like pursuing your vision for your business and your dreams and that kind of thing. And they said, so many times we think, oh, it's going to take so long to get there. And the person said it this way. Let's say it takes 10 years, right? In 10 right. years, you're going to be 10 years older either way. So you might as well get started. And I thought,
right, exactly.
There's a lot of truth in that. And now I also know, Carol, with your journey, you're one of the best at what you do at the company you're at, right? In the training classes, they were playing your calls like, okay, this is a best practice call. It's Carol again, because you're so good at it. You decided to put your hat in the ring for a totally different role. How many years ago was that?
That was 3 years ago. My husband, he had taken a position here in Charlotte. And was working for a company and staying in a extended stay that his company was paying for and coming home on the weekends. So I was literally by myself all week long. We had to make a decision. We're like, okay, you know, we always thought that the home that we were in was going to be our retirement home. We always planned for it. And again, the journey changed because that wasn't what was ending up happening. You know, the Charlotte job was working out well for him. And we were apart most of the time, apart to the point that we were getting used to being apart. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's not good. So we made the decision to move to Charlotte, and I put in for the position, applied online. And met with my boss at the time and ended up getting the position and have done real well with it. And he have done real well with it. And I've never, like, literally thought in my life that I would be in the position that I'm in. I wouldn't have said, oh, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and be a salesperson. Yeah. You know, I just would never have thought that, because, you know, I'm relational and I'm not, you know, very task oriented, but people need that now. They need mm-hmm. somebody that, you know, I have customers just call me. I don't really know why they're calling. They just want to talk to me.
I can totally see that, Carol. I can.
And I'm like, okay, is anything else I can help with? Oh, no, I just wanted to say hi. And I'm like, okay.
That's a good problem to have as a salesperson, let me just tell you.
Yeah, so I mean, it's been, again, it's been a funny journey, and I just don't let things steal my joy.
Yeah.
You know, my husband and I have that discussion really often, because he'll have somebody cut him off in traffic, or he'll have somebody that's not merging when the sign says merge in 2 miles, merge in 1 mile, merge in a half a mile, merge in a fourth of a mile, and the guy's not merging. And I can see my husband, you know, again, he's unfortunately, he's got that German background. I can see his patience starting to expire. And I look over him, I'm like, do not let them steal your joy. I said, don't let them steal your joy, because they don't know what they're doing. Their joy's not getting stole. The only one that it's affecting right now is you, and of course me right now. So, you know, And I think that we get so consumed by the Fox News reports and the NBC news reports and the CBS news reports and in all these news reports, we get so consumed by that it does suck away from our joy in our life and to know that, you know, it's like, especially right now, Bobby, people are so concerned, like, what's next year going to be like? Mm-hmm. Why just not say, just take one day at a time, you know, one day at a time.
Yeah.
You got to just think about today. Don't think about the whole picture of things because you will get discouraged.
Yep. And it doesn't make it go away, you know? And the other thing too, Carol, with your, one of the things that impresses me is, you know, you took on this new sales opportunity and it's an outside sales position, right? So your job is calling on businesses. And obviously with COVID going on, it's a lot harder to do that now. It's harder to show up. And yet, I believe I have this right. Year to date, don't you have the most commercial sales in your region?
Year to date, as of last month, as of June, I had the most commercial accounts in my region.
Okay.
I just got my July report and the guy jumped ahead of me a couple in Florida. but as of last month in June, or actually last month in June, I had the most commercial, non-residential, well, commercial accounts sold.
Yeah.
In my region.
And if I know you, you're going to be working doubly hard now to get back on the top. But what impresses me, Carol, is that you're not waiting for things to go back to what they used to be. You're so creative on how you reach out to people.
People need somebody to relate to.
Yeah.
And I don't think that sometimes people take into consideration the person at the front desk.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I walked into a company last week, Bobby, and the lady at the front desk said, oh, well, Jennifer or whatever, she's not here right now or she's on the phone, but I'll get this information to her. And I ended up striking up a conversation with her. I said, gosh, I said, I really, really like that picture, you know, behind you. It reminds me, we were in Brevard last week and that picture is so pretty. And she's like, oh yeah. She goes, and she started telling me about all the paintings that they have throughout the office. And then it turns out that that person was the assistant to the buyer.
Wow.
And mm-hmm. So, you know, and that, you know, just being able to make that connection with that person on a level, you know, because you've got to, you know, if you look through that person, you know what it means? Looking through
yep.
them.
Mm-hmm.
If you look through that person, then that person could hold a very big part of the decision-making process.
Yep.
And not to mention, just seeing that individual as a person, like what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
That person might be having a bad day.
That's right. We never know. We never know what kind of day they're having or what kind of story that we don't know what's going on for them.
Right. And it could be just the fact of just inspiring that person or just changing their life just for a minute, just changing mm-hmm. their life just for a minute. You know, with suicides up the way they are, so high, more than we'll ever hear about on the news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to be that bright light in somebody's life. It's more than just about having a salesperson's position.
That's right.
It's about walking in and making a difference in whosoever life that you touch, right down to the person that's sitting at the front desk.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I've been successful. It will always be a very relational business, and it will always be the key to finding what is important to people, you know, from this lady being an assistant to the buyer to you could be sitting there talking to somebody that was the buyer themselves, just answering the phone while the lady was at lunch. You never know.
But I think that when you come from that place like you do, you know, with the compassion and the caring.
To me, it is a matter of raising that person up. There's two people in the world. There's the people that walk in the door and say, "Here I am." And then there's the people that walk in the door and say, "There you are."
Mm.
You know, and I try to be that "there you are" person, even though I've got so much going on in my life. You know, I don't have this easy, stress-free life, but continually you have to look at it like, "There you are."
Yeah.
Well, how can I help you today?
It's that whole, you know, when we're in service of others, we're most fulfilled.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I love what you said there, the "here I am" versus "there you are." I think that is just a perfect way to kind of bring this to a close. And now if someone wants to connect with you, is LinkedIn the best way for them to do that?
Yes. I do have a LinkedIn under Carol Klaus. Even if there's somebody out there that just needs somebody to just be a pen pal, anything, you're going through a hard situation, you had some questions about something, you know, "I'm a cancer survivor. How did you get past this part in your life?" Feel free to message me. I'm there. I'm always looking for new friendships and new people to meet and new people to correspond to that help with this journey through life.
Carol, you're just genuinely one of the biggest hearted people I've ever known. So I just appreciate that about you so much. Do you have any parting words of wisdom for folks who might be listening?
Just be the person that somebody needs. That's it. Life is too short. Don't harbor negative feelings towards somebody. If you're fighting with your brother, if you're fighting with your sister, if you're fighting with your spouse, life is too short. Just reach out. Be that person that doesn't care about being right all the time. You don't need to be right all the time. Just know that you can have that joy without being right.
Yeah.
You know, that's so important. I don't, you know, I tell my husband all the time if we're having an argument, I don't want to be right. I just want him to get better. You know, I want to find a solution. You know, I don't want to be right. So don't feel like you've got to be right. Don't feel like you've got to, you know, and don't feel like you've got to change things overnight. Just take small steps to get there.
Yep. Yeah. And I love how you expressed it. Be the person that someone else needs.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the other thing about you though, Carol, you're that person. And yet I've always known you to be true to who you are at the same time. So it's not like you're sacrificing who you are. You're intentional about how you show up.
Yeah. You know, and it's you can't hide who you are. People are very wise. You know, usually when you meet somebody for the first time, within the first 10 to 15 seconds, people are very wise and they know who you are. Mm-hmm. And that's why you got to just be real. Don't just connect with them how you know best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just connect with them with your story. You know, real quick, Bobby, about the story about you know, waking up in the hospital after I had cancer. Mm-hmm. My brother's like, you've never told me that story. Why don't you tell people that story? It's an awesome way to connect to people. Just make sure to get your stories out there and be real, be who you are.
That's exactly right. And Carol, it's funny that you bring that up, because one of the reasons I wanted to start the podcast is, you know this because you've been through workshops with me, but in the intros, I always say, and, you know, tell us about yourself, blah, 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 and answer the question, if you really knew me, you would know. And Over the last 12 years doing workshops, I've been so humbled and just flat out amazed and in awe of the stories that people have. And yet, how often do we tell the stories? Not nearly enough. So, man, I'm with you 100%. And that's why it's like, that's why I started, one of the reasons I started the podcast, because there are so many amazing stories that would inspire and help us. They need to be heard.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you and what you're doing.
Perfect. And I'll put your LinkedIn profile in the show notes to make it easier for people, you know, so they can reach out like that. So Carol, thank you so much for your time and just sharing your heart with us. It was great.
Thanks, Bobby. You take good care. You be careful out there.
I hope that you enjoyed meeting Carol and being exposed to her resilient character and just her spirit that it never stops. So here are some of my key takeaways. Number one, showing up for others can help you through your own moments of despair. Number two, you can be an angel for someone else and you may never even know it. Number three, when Carol is confronted with someone who is upset, she reminds herself that a display of anger by them may not have anything at all to do with her. It may have more to do with what else is going on in their life and in their day. And that's how she can reach for empathy and compassion versus reacting with matching anger. Number four, obstacles are a part of life and you will get through it. Number five, when faced with an obstacle, instead of seeing the whole picture, the whole mountain that's in front of her, she tackles it one piece at a time. Six, don't let someone else steal your joy. And number seven, I loved when she talked about the two types of people. You know, the person who enters the room and says, here I am, versus the person who enters the room and says, there you are. I loved that. Again, these were just some of my takeaways. My hope is that an episode like this will provide inspiration to you. You can reach back to these stories time and time again as fuel. If you found this podcast helpful, please consider subscribing as well as leaving us a 5-star review below. It's one of the best ways that we can get the word out about the podcast. Also, if you know someone who could benefit from the podcast and the message that we are spreading, please consider telling them about it. This has been the Unyielded Podcast, and I believe that thriving isn't a destination. It is a process. It is an evolution where we are continuing to expand who we are. It's how we flourish and how we can direct our energy into a place of positive energy and influence. My life's work is to change the world for the better, one life at a time. I hope that you'll help me do that by sharing the work.